Welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob, KD2NVB, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages, and we offer original articles and reviews on many of the topics covered here during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club's website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange colored type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type into your browser puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. And we also have an Echo Link node available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month, and all of this information can also be found on our club website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. You have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Bob, KD2NVB, will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment and, when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here on the technical net or use our email address, which is techac2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob, KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Roy. I hope you hear me. I'm hearing you kind of faintly with a lot of hum, so I don't know how you're hearing me, and my microphone is still a little funky here, or I should say the connection.
Well, I'm sorry to hear my signal is low. I think I have it cranked up as much as I can. You have a little hum on your signal as well, so maybe the repeater isn't feeling very well. It's been doing a lot of strange kerchunking, and I had to change the timing on EchoLink. Otherwise, it just went on and on and on and on in the feedback loop. But we'll see what happens tonight. I will crank the signal a little bit higher. I think I'm hitting the limiter on the amplifier, but I'll see if I can crank it a little higher. Anyway, if anyone out there would like to check in, if they have any questions or comments for the technical net tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Whiskey Bravo 4, Alpha India Zulu, WB4AIZ, Chuck in Kenneth City, Florida, EchoLink.
Oh, good to have you. Good to have you aboard, Chuck. I hope things are going well for you down in Florida.
Okay. Just turn it over to the Echo. Anyways, here in Echo Link on my assisted living facility. And I've been out here before, but that's why I happened to see that there was some activity. But it's just Wednesday night, so just thought I'd check in and I'd do my rounds before I see.
Okay, Chuck, you're always welcome. Yeah, I remember you checking in a few months ago. You're always welcome. What can I do? I tell you, bookmark the the node, and the repeater is kind of only really active for our Tuesday night InfoNet and our second and fourth Wednesday technical net. Otherwise, things are a lot lighter. So you're always welcome, Chuck. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club 10-meter technical net. If anyone has any technical questions or topics for discussion, please feel free, hit that push to talk, and give us your ID and your call sign. Gosh, I think we're going to have another really, really quiet technical net. We'll give it a few minutes. Hopefully people are just arriving late, and we'll see. See, William has checked into Echolink. Chuck has left us on Linked and such. And William, how are you doing? Well, I guess he's away from the Echolink. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. And this continues to be the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month, starting at 9 p.m. To discuss technical things. If you have any questions or you'd like to discuss some topic, discuss some antenna design or a question you might have about the hobby or in about science in general, we're open to a lot of different subjects. We just need someone to give a subject. Again, AC2GS, this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or comments for tonight, please hit that push-to-talk button and identify yourself. Give us your call sign and tell us if you have a question or a comment. Oh, well, let me just ramble on for a little while. I've been off the 10-meter net for about a month because my Flex Radio's fans died. And I had to send it off to Austin, and unfortunately they kept it on a shelf because they're real behind in repairs, and they have not enough repair technicians. But they finally swapped out my fans, all four of them. The two that were sitting on top of field programmable gate arrays, and the two side fans that, you know, all computers have fans, and my Flex Radio is about 85% computer and 15% radio. So they replaced the fans, and they shipped them back from Austin, Texas, and I plugged everything in and went back to doing the 10-meter net this past Sunday. 10 meters was kind of open. There was a German contest going on, a lot of guys with German accents and call signs talking to each other. They didn't seem to really be interested in being on a net, so they didn't check into the 10-meter net. Neither did a lot of club members and other people. I think maybe four people checked in, but what can you do? Hopefully next Sunday 10 meters will be a little bit livelier, and maybe we'll even get to do some DX. So if anyone out there has 10-meter capability, tune into 28.380 upper sideband Sunday morning at 11 a.m. and try your luck. Again, I am AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, and we're open for business. If anyone has any questions or topics for discussion or comments, please check in, hit that push to talk, give us your first name and your call sign. Well, this is going very, very slow. I'm really at a loss to tell you what I have planned, because I don't have anything particularly planned. The technical net is a kind of cooperative effort between me and Bob and people participating on the technical net. If people don't particularly aren't interested in participating, there's not a great deal we can do. So we will ask again if anyone out there listening in has any technical questions or topics for discussion, and see what happens.
KD2NVP. Roy, you actually are very faint. It's probably the repeater. I've actually got my volume, my receive volume turned to the max, just to hear you kind of quietly with a lot of hum, which is part largely because I got the volume turned to the max. I'm guessing it's the repeater. Maybe you're hearing me the same way. Maybe it's having an effect on getting out there in general. Back to you.
Okay. Maybe it's just a technical issue. I don't know. I mean, it's the EchoLink connection to the repeater was very weird. I think 2 days ago, it started to kind of have a feedback loop and kerchunk endlessly, and I had to readjust all the timings. And I kind of hoped that that was sufficient to deal with it. I don't know if the timings really shouldn't have affected the amplitude of any signal, so I'm not quite sure why my signal should be not so good anymore. So I don't know. Give it another minute or so, and if we don't elicit any kind of a response, I guess we'll just call it a night.
I could copy you, no problem. It's just, you know, like I say, my volume's turned max, and you're low in volume, and of course the noise gets turned up with. Yeah, it's probably, I think there's more hum than usual already, but you are definitely copyable. I mean, that's not really an issue there.
Okay, well, then it's just that everyone's busy elsewhere, so I guess. So, I see William having logged on to the EchoLink. He doesn't seem to be responding, so I guess he hooked up the connection and had to do some chore or something, and is planning to come back at a later time to chat. So all I can do is see him on the window. Once again, let's try it. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here every second and fourth Wednesday in each and every month at 9 p.m. Technology. If you're out there and you're so inclined, then please hit that push to talk and give me your call sign and your first name, and if you have a question or a comment for tonight. Well, Bob, I don't know what to tell you. I think, you know, every so often there's a night where everyone's got something else to do. Apparently, this is one of them. If we can't raise anyone, I guess the best approach is to just kind of call it a night, and we'll check back here November 8th, the next time we have the second Wednesday of the month.
Okay, yeah, if you want to do that, it's fine. I just want to say, are you hearing me, like, really faint? Do you have to crank your receive volume up, you know, towards the end just to hear me and with a lot of hum and stuff? I'm just wondering.
Let's see if I'm transmitting again. Yeah, no, I don't, but, it could be other things. You and I aren't the same distance from the repeater, so it could be some aspect of the repeater. I don't know.
Yeah, my mic, okay. But yeah, so I guess it might be that. I'm closer than you are for sure. And my mic is, the connector's weird still. I blew some compressed air into it, but actually it was an old can, and I kind of put a bunch of moisture looking stuff in there. I think the can is so old I should get rid of it, and I think I used the wrong stuff. Anyway, I'll keep working on that too.
Yeah, I mean, it really shouldn't be that old. I'm assuming that you bought it when we talked about it, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. You know, this stuff should be good for 8, 9, 10 years at least.
Actually, it's a different can than the stuff you recommend. I have the stuff you recommend. I had never opened it, but I had this other thing. But it's also supposed to be for electronics, but I think maybe I shouldn't use it. It is very old, so Anyway, I'll keep at this thing. And I'll have to look into the wire. I confess I haven't done it yet. I've just been doing other things, busy. So, but just before the net, I did blow into it with the thing.
Yeah, it's okay. If you don't remember how old it is, and it sounds like it's not really have any propellant left to it, you're probably best to retire it. And, you know, I mean, you have the fresh whole can of deoxit to replace it with.
Right. The deoxit is probably better, too. Well, this stuff, there's plenty of pressure, and when I blow it, it's weird. I did it at close range, and then this kind of liquidy stuff formed. I go, what? And I just, I blew it out with just a hand blower, you know, the thing you use for getting dust off a camera lens, just to dry it again. But anyway, it's no worse than before, but it's no better.
Well, you know, on the bright side, it didn't ruin anything. It didn't help, but it didn't ruin anything. So, you know, next time, you know, try the new can. See if, and again, you know, maybe take a little magnifying glass and take a little look-see in there, see if the pins are bent and out of shape or something, or if they're just sitting there quietly where they belong.
Yeah, I guess where they belong, they should be, like, parallel to each other. I haven't looked yet, but I assume that this should be, like, all bent at the same angle and like, you know, parallel to each other as opposed to being uneven.
They should be parallel, and they probably should be recessed. They shouldn't be kind of poking out at odd places.
Right. I've got some pretty small needle nose pliers, so maybe if I see them a little off, maybe those will help. They're pretty, they got really kind of needly ends. I inherited these from my dad. They look pretty good. So that might be useful.
Yeah, I mean, I'd first inspect it to make absolutely sure, because, you know, you could do some damage too. So, you know, take a look, see if it's real wrangly, and if it is, then you can try the needle nose pliers lightly. You don't want to rip out any of the pins. That's just going to make things worse, and see if you can kind of press them back into their recesses, and maybe that'll help.
Right, I get the idea.
Alpha Charlie 2 Zulu Victor to net control.
Hello, William. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just got in. I was at the NAB thing today down at Javits. What a great show it was.
Ah, very good. I'm glad you had a fun time. I've seen videos of NAB. Never, you know, part of the industry, so I never actually took in the place, but it must be rather fascinating. I'm sure they have lots and lots of toys.
There are just so many toys. The thing is, this year, it's also in conjunction also with AES, so your badge gets into the NAB show plus the AES show. And the thing is, I go back so far in the industry, I was such a buyer for so much equipment over the years and stuff. I see old friends on the floor walking around. Young kids that were I brought up are now have their own businesses, you know, and people that are old are older. And it was really a great day.
Were they showing off any particular shiny brand new technologies?
You know, the thing is, it's the same thing updated, you know. So I thought that one of the best things that I saw was this great deal with these. They had these small cameras in a cage that was basically stereoscopic. So there were two small cameras side by side, and it was in this cage. And then the dancer or actor or whatever would go inside the cage, and they would null out the entire background digitally. And so all that was changing was the guy jumping around in the cage. And so the thing is, they got all these different stereo views of him, which made like terabytes of streaming data. And then this stuff, then you could use to put into like VR representations of people.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I mean, you could basically take out backgrounds these days in any way, shape, or form. There's a lot of chroma keying without the chroma key. NVIDIA has a plug-in for that, and it works rather nicely. But yeah, if you have stereoscopic images, you can far better try and reconstruct a three-dimensional model of what's going on. And, you know, there's a lot of virtual reality and added reality to these things. So, yeah, that sounds fun.
This is a trade show, and basically you have a lot of manufacturers that are out there trying to invent industries. And this gentleman that was showing me this stuff is a camera manufacturer. So you can see that this would be a great way to start manufacturing hundreds of cameras to create these 3D virtual sets, you know. So it seems like this is a great business. I mean, a lot of the show is hardware-oriented and stuff like that. So anyway, I had a great time hanging out. I'm going back tomorrow and then on Friday also to the AES show, which is also running. And so that's like all about microphones. So we'll see how that goes, and I'll check in again whenever I see you again.
Very good. I think in the old days, I don't know if he's still doing it, but Bob Heil would come to these NAB shows. I saw some videotape of he brought some ham equipment and gave out some things for free. And I remember that a few years ago. I think Bob is kind of semi-retired at this point, so I don't know if he puts on a show anymore.
It was a lot of the smaller guys weren't there at the show. The larger people that had been in the business for a while, you know, and stuff like that. And there were some shared small booths around the edges, which is where I like to hang out, because that's where the, you know, some of the smaller companies are, which actually have innovations. So, you know, it's a great show.
Okay, very good. You know, I mean, the generally most of that equipment is designed for the industry, so it's not consumer priced, most of it. So a lot of it, you know, gives regular guys a little bit of a nosebleed when they read the price tags.
I was talking to this guy about this monitor. They had this great 3D OLED monitor, 12 nit, you know, 1,000 nit monitor. And the thing is that, you know, the price tag is like so high on this stuff. You have to like just want the best to be able to just afford it. It's for, you know, just a higher class of people than I am.
No, it's for people who have a business where they can take everything off as a deduction. 12,000 nits probably would burn out my retinas.
They had it toned down. They had a tent inside, and they had it toned down. And so, but the thing is even if they put up bright, it's not like a bright light. It's not like those damn headlights that shine in my eyes that create a sparkle around the edge of the light. You know, it's just like a bright flat light. It doesn't have any sparkle to it. So there's no real, you know, benefit to that high nit value, because the high nit value actually from sunlight is a different quality, and they're not going to get it on video.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, you're really kind of talking about it depends on what you need it for. You know, they have displays. I think the standard LCD computer monitor is something like 200 nits. So, yeah, there's such a thing as too much of a good thing. So, you know, I think my monitors are reasonably bright. For televisions, I guess it's a selling point. So that, you know, you can have ambient light on all over the room, and it's still emission so much light from the display that it doesn't get bothered by the ambient light. I assume that's the consumer TV reason for a high nit screen capacity.
I don't know. And it's what they need in Times Square for daylight operations, you know. to blind the tourists. Anyway, I don't know if there's anybody out there looking for some technical answers, but great to hear from you. And back to net control. I'll try to think of a question if nobody chimes in.
Okay, William, glad to have you aboard. Yeah, it's been incredibly quiet. Chuck from Florida dropped in to say hello and left, and no one else has really checked in, just me and Bob and Bob and me. Let me give a shout-out. If anyone out there has checked in during our conversation, this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Every second and fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 p.m., we get together to try and talk about technology. If you have any amateur radio questions or comments or topics for discussion or any science-related topic, we're always ready to jump in and try and navigate. So if anyone is out there and they have a question or a comment, please hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign. Okay, well, William, that's what it's been like for about the last 20, 25 minutes. How's about we do the puzzle? Since Bob is here and you're here, it's an illustrated one, unfortunately, so you do have to look at the web page. And the question is, it's a schematic, and it wants someone to identify what it probably is. And you have four choices. One is a frequency multiplier. The second B is grounded grid amplifier. Selection C is a detector stage, and selector D is a balanced modulator. So if you, William, or you, Bob, would like to hazard a guess, just feel free.
I just looked at this. So, Bob, give it a shot. Let me look at this for a second.
Quite honestly, I really don't have a clue on this one. My guess would be almost completely random.
Well, Bob, look for any hints. You know, look at what the components are. There's an input. There seems to be an output. The output is hooked into something interesting. It might give you a big hint.
You know, shooting it off towards the grid, whipping through those double humpies and jumping out the antenna.
Yeah, which of these four things might be hooked up to an antenna?
Well, it's not a frequency multiplier. To me, like, the grid is grounded, so B's got like 10 points right there.
Good.
Going on, and the modulation's coming from the input. It's not balanced. It's unbalanced, so there you go. It's B.
Correct. It's B. There's a couple of giveaways. The number one in my mind is the fact that there's an antenna coming out of it. The only thing that would have an antenna coming out of it is an amplifier, and it even goes to the point of saying it's a grounded grid, as you mentioned. And if you know how to read schematics, you know that there's a vacuum tube off to the left, and the grid is grounded. So, yes, it's a grounded grid amplifier. The answer is B.
To be up to another topic of conversation, it turns out there's no heater schematic included.
What are you alluding to? I'm not quite sure.
For a vacuum tube to operate correctly, you have to have heater voltage to heat up, you know, so the electrons can fly off and jump over. Then there's no... there's no circuit that shows that part of the circuit.
Yeah, it's a simplified schematic. You know, pretty much everyone back in the good old days knew that you had to supply the proper voltage potential to the heating elements, and that was a kind of a given. So to clean up the simple diagrams, sometimes they would just leave out the heater circuits.
Which brings up this topic of conversation. I recently found out about curtain burners, which were these cheap-ass radios that they used to sell to people that basically didn't have transformers for the filament voltages. And what they did was they ran all the filaments in series through the tubes, and then they used an asbestos resistive cable as a third wire to the plug, and then you just plugged it in and the radio worked. Don't you think that was an innovative idea to save a ton of copper?
If you go back into not that ancient history of electronics, there have been so many safety featureless designs that were very popular because they saved a lot of money and it was inexpensive for the consumer. You know, we must have talked about it before. There's a design called the American Five because it uses five vacuum tubes. And, you know, even my parents had one of those as an AM radio. The problem is that those things are not really, they're not safe at all because they had no ground. They had no polarized plug. And so if the back chassis was at all exposed, which a lot of them tended to be, because when you first bought them, the cover in the back was made out of cardboard, and those would kind of fall apart rather early. So you have the Bakelite in the front, you have the chassis hidden in the back, and the chassis is hot half the time. So very dangerous design. I'm sure a lot of people got the feeling of 120 volts. I did when I was a little kid because my parents decided to put it right next the windowsill of the kitchen, right next to the sink that's grounded.
Right, that's so interesting because that just means that the curtain burners had double problems because, you know, there's only a two-wire circuit coming from the outlet anyway. So I'm sure that they could easily get the hot chassis problem the same way because a lot of times those old chassis, they weren't isolated. You didn't have, like, standoffs with electronics, like mounted on standoffs, and then the chassis connected to ground. They just used the chassis.
They did a lot of semi-foolish things. And at that age, there really weren't that much in the way of polarized plugs. You know, they were, 50% of the time the chassis was at ground, and 50% of the time the chassis was hot. And there was no real good way of knowing unless you electrocute yourself. And, you know, this is the way it was. And then the electrical code brought upon polarized plugs, and grounded polarized plugs, and ground all these GFCIs and all these esoteric circuits that have to be used if you use it in the kitchen or in the bathroom so that you can't shock yourself. But, you know, we lived through a lot of dangerous times. We've mentioned it in the past. Asbestos was all over the place. There were fluoroscopes at the shoe stores that you could irradiate your feet to wiggle your toes and see how the shoes fit. And we did all kinds of dangerous things. The people who took radium cures, they had a dispenser where you ran water, regular drinking water, through a radium source to energize it. And God knows how many people ended up with some malignancy because of that. So we got past a lot of really foolish practices.
Well, that certainly is so. And I've looked at a lot of those medical machines, and I've been in awe. And I've had my nerves tested by people like that, and I don't like those machines at all. So that's a totally separate conversation. But meanwhile, I want to get back to the curtain burner problem. And it seems to me, I'm asking your professional opinion now, do you think that they could have probably designed a light bulb into the series circuit so that if you turned on the radio, you also turned on the light? And then they wouldn't have had to have had, you know, this asbestos-coated cord, you know, running the radio. So why didn't they think of something like that? Or is that totally off the wall?
I think you would have some problems with the consumers. You know, you buy a radio, you plug it in, you turn it on. Unless, you know, the dial lights up a little bit, that's fine. All of a sudden, if a 50-watt light bulb lights up, people are going to say, you know, what the heck is this? Plus, I'm sure there are people who like to listen to the radio in the dark. You know, my father, may he rest in peace, he always used to set his little timer and go to sleep listening to Barry Gray.
Very well, and there's nothing to say that you couldn't, like, get a little metal cup with some radiator fins and put it on the top to heat your room. But, you know, it still seems to me that it seems like a pretty stupid idea to generate this whole, you know, like, asbestos core thing. And just, well, now that we know asbestos is bad for you, I suppose that's the difference.
Unfortunately, that's a very big difference. I've mentioned before, I was a chemistry student, and it was nothing to take asbestos pads and a file and file a hole and put the neck of a flask through it in order to protect some parts from excessive heat. And that would throw asbestos fibers all over the lab, which was ridiculously dangerous. You know, I'm thankful that I haven't suffered from mesothelioma from that. You know, in other days, we used lots of benzene solvent. Benzene is rather dangerous, should be used under hoods, which we had hood, but no one thought to use them for the benzene because they didn't know that it produces liver toxicity and can provoke liver cancer and other fun things like that. So a lot of this is just out of sheer ignorance. We have a problem with perceiving dangers correctly. We didn't think that radiation was dangerous at first, and yet a lot of people thought that electricity was very dangerous. When industry just started to electrify, workers demanded hazard pay because they really felt that it was very dangerous to have electricity in the building that they were doing whatever they were doing industrially. So they got the electricity kind of wrong, and they got the radiation in the opposite direction kind of wrong. They got the asbestos wrong. They got cigarettes wrong. They had a lot of things wrong.
As a civilization, we lived through it, and now we're in this era, which we have a lot of other things wrong. Anyway, I hope we get back to the nirvana we're supposed to be in, you know, because this world is so beautiful, and we don't need all this bullshit going on.
Well, you know, I think we make our own bullshit. Mankind is quite capable of that feat of magic. So as long as we're kind of ruling the roost here, I expect to see a lot more of it.
Anyway, it's great to hear your thoughts. I like the light idea the most, and I guess I would have been a frustrated inventor back in the days because when those people were just inventing things, if you had the ability like Edison did to have a whole lab full of people just go in there and make something interesting, that would have been a wild and fun time.
I always assumed that Edison's employees worked very, very, very hard. I don't know if they were paid terribly well. I know that they didn't get any of the fame or the fortune. Thomas Edison sort of was Elon Musk before Elon Musk. You know, all these rocket scientists spent so much time and effort in successfully creating rocket engines, and he blows through them and says that it was all his idea. So, you know, in some ways, I hope that Thomas Alva Edison paid his research as well. I kind of doubt it personally, but that's my own cynicism.
Quite frankly, you're right, because Tesla was promised a whole bunch of money to redesign one of his motors, apparently, and then he didn't pay off, and that's why Tesla quit and dug ditches and was so pissed off at him. So, you know, just think, if this guy was more magnanimous, we would have had a totally different situation.
Well, you know, you have the problem of businessmen are very often sociopaths, because businessmen have very little to no conscience. And so when they play games and one-up other people, they deal with it. They don't lose any sleep. So if you kind of look into the literature, a lot of these people who are CEOs are complete sociopaths. They have no sense of anyone else but themselves. They have no empathy whatsoever. So, Edison was a tinkerer, inventor, but for the most part, he was a businessman and an entrepreneur. And that's really where he became incredibly successful. He was able to market his inventions and make a lot of money, and then he rolled them back into the labor of a lot of clever research engineers and scientists. And, you know, until, say, Bell Labs came into being, probably Edison's labs were the most productive facilities in the United States.
I was so fortunate. I was able to work with Bell Labs while they were still in existence and go over to Homedale and those places over there at Bedminster. It was really a fantastic experience to be able to be a part of that.
Yeah, it must have been. I was friends with WA2CDL, Andy. He worked at the, unfortunately, Bell Labs was kind of collapsed, folded in, and sold off to a cell phone company. And so he was a subcontractor of that cell phone company. So he got to work in Bell Labs. And it's somewhat now a museum. There are a lot of plaques on the wall and pictures of Nobel Prize winners. Many of them came from Bell Labs and such. You know, transistors, the microwave background, and information theory. It just goes on and on. They won a lot of Nobel Prizes there.
So the Bell Labs I know was in a giant black building out in Homedale, and that was really a great building. That was actually better than Bedminster. But is that what you're talking about, the one in Homedale, or are you talking about somewhere else?
I'm not 100% sure. It was in New Jersey. Poor Andy had to get up at something like 5 o'clock in the morning and take railroad trains and other trains to get there. So I don't remember exactly where in New Jersey, but it's Bell Labs is apparently in New Jersey. They might have had other buildings elsewhere.
The main building was in Jersey. I've read books about it and stuff. They started out building tubes up here at West Beth, and then they outgrew that facility. Then they moved to Jersey. You know, it's a big, long story. Goes on forever, but it goes back way, to the original Audion days. So, anyway, I don't really know.
Yeah, the Audion days go back to, what's his name again? I forget, DeForest.
DeForest and stuff. I was account rep for AT&T when we built a lot of satellite communications, and so my job was to make sure that they got everything they needed. It was a great job. So I got to, there was a lot of things that were needing to be developed during the time I had my career with that, and so it was really a whole lot of fun, to participate in all of that. And then going to NAB today is just like a little glimpse of it, But I saw my old boss. I ended up working for him starting in 1983, and then, on and off until like 2006. So anyway, it was great to see him.
Oh, good. It's nice to hear that he's still in the business.
He's in charge then, and he's still in charge now. I mean, he's really a powerhouse within our industry, the satellite communications industry. I moved on to broadcast, which is totally different, but he's still a powerhouse in SATCOM.
Okay, well, it's a shame a lot of people end up getting retired early because, young people just kind of get on top and throw them off the cliff. So it's good to know that, that people appreciate expertise in some fields.
Article today that the us older generations, people are holding certain things together, and when we pass, which is, you know, within 10 to 20 years, we're all gone. You know, then the whole world is like, nobody has any memory of how we got here. And so we're like on off a cliff. It's kind of like a strange experience. So I don't know how to even preserve any knowledge that I have to pass on, because I know so much, but it's not interesting at all to anyone else but me.
Well, it sort of depends upon the type of knowledge. You know, there's a whole bunch of guys who were brilliant when it came to Fortran and COBOL back in the 60s and the 70s and maybe the 80s. And then it just got overtaken by newer languages until the 2000, year 2000 problem, that a lot of programs weren't designed to roll over after 1999. And all of a sudden, they went running and looking for these Fortran and COBOL people to patch the old software rather than reinvent the wheel. So, you know, there's some knowledge that's always useful, some knowledge that's occasionally useful, and that's the biggest pain in the backside to deal with, because, you know, there's not that much reason for a young person to study a lot of Fortran and COBOL, because, you know, the Y2K problem came and went. So, you know, if you're trying to get a software job and you tell people that you're incredibly good at COBOL and Fortran, most of the people interviewing you will ask you what the hell that was, because they won't even recognize it as a language anymore. You know, there's so many generations since then. So, yeah, we all kind of know a lot of things that used to be very important and very useful and have grown less useful as the years progress. And, you know, if you ever go through any kind of material historically, people have been very frightened of the next generation screwing the world up since the Greek days. You know, there are manuscripts where Greek citizens predicted that the Greek world would collapse in on itself if their children ruled the roost. And they survived for a time. So somehow I think they'll figure it out and you know, pick themselves up, brush themselves off, and try and do a good job. We'll see. Well, we won't, but, you know, the universe will see.
Certainly the case. Studying history, we've been watching these various episodes of different times in history, different civilizations, how they rose and fall, what happened, different parts of the globe all over. You can see a lot of the stuff happened in the past, and you can see how people were fucked over and then they recovered and then, you know, things changed. But, you know, when you're in your current situation, it's like, well, we're here, now what? You know, it's like you can just imagine the best and the worst all the time. It's just a terrible situation to have to, you know, be panicked about all of this.
Well, you try your best and see what goes. You know, one of the lines that I like the best. There's a lot of lines that I hate because everyone kind of uses them over and over again. But one of the lines is that history does not repeat itself, but history does rhyme. So I like that way of looking at it, like it's couplets of a poem.
It's great talking about philosophy with you. You know, we've also been watching, you know, a series on Greek philosophy and the Stoics, you know. But it's true what you said about the Greeks earlier, when, you know, they flourish for a while, and then they get knocked out, and then the Romans come over and steal all of their culture. And then we got this Romanized Greek culture, which is our background.
Well, yeah, but if you dig deeply into Greek history, you'll find that they stole a bunch of stuff as well. They stole a lot of their math from Egypt. They stole their alphabet from the Phoenicians. So, you know, everyone steals. You know, that old line about borrowing, an idiot borrows, but an artist steals, or something like that. So, you know, you can go all the way back to Mesopotamia.
like that analogy, because, you know, we're forced to actually be a product of whatever it was, you know, that made us where we are. And so I think that it's better not to use the word steal. It's better to use word learn. And the learn word, I think, is better, because we do learn from everything we see and hear. And the fact that we want to imitate art is good. And I think that that's the thing. It becomes maligned if you say you're stealing it or you're appropriating it. But if you've learned, then that's not so bad, because now you have come around to a different way of thinking.
Yeah, but the problem, as I see it, is, again, I'll use my perfect example, good old Elon Musk. Elon Musk basically has a collection, probably, of popular science, the future tech, that I read in the 60s. And every so often he pulls it out and he says it was all his idea. This underground tunnel vacuum system that he was promoting, and other people wasted $1 billion on it and then gave up on it, is from articles in the 50s and the 60s. And as far as he's concerned, he woke up one day and realized it out of nothing. So that's a case of stealing. When you borrow something or you learn from something, then usually you might give someone the sense that it came before you. If you present it as your own, then you're a thief.
I do think, not to say that you're wrong, but I do think that there's such a thing as simultaneous invention. And I think that there is the ability for people to invent things that they need when they see them, even if other people have already invented them and they didn't know it because they're so uneducated. They didn't know shit, so they had to invent it for themselves. I have that personal problem because I invent everything around me, then I find out that somebody else invented a safety pin. You know, I mean, it's crazy.
I don't know. I mean, I think he's knowledgeable about these other things. And he has a long history of basically stealing stuff. One of his first claim to fame is he sold a code for a video game to a magazine. The game that he sold to the magazine was basically a ripoff of a popular game. It was already out there and being used. So this was when he was about 16 years old. He basically plagiarized. So he's kind of a serial plagiarist. So I don't think that this is accidental. He seems to keep on doing it repeatedly. His brain control, Neuralink, what he really did was there was a college professor who had done all of this research. Elon found his lab assistant, graduate student who finally PhD, handed him a salary check and had him set up an identical lab for Neuralink. So he basically stole the professor's research out from under him. Not that he made anything happen with it. He's listed that nonsensical company is worth something like $5 billion. It has a robotic chair that some idiot will allow to try and implant electrodes through their skull. You know, God have mercy on their souls.
Roy, I heard all this dead monkey stuff. I think that's highly plausible. There's lots of dead monkey, you know, coming out of those labs. I thought initially these things were supposed to sense the waveforms around, you know, the skull and the various rhythms, alpha, beta, theta, whatever, you know, that can be measured through surface level probes. But you can see that he's obviously gone farther than that. Even so, there are stories of neural implants working for amputees and things like that actually are able to do it medically. And so there's a technology out there, even though he's an exploitive as whatever, the fact that it's getting invested in and we're exploring it is a development of humanity. And, you know, as bad as he is, he's the only one actually pushing that envelope with money. And so there's the problem.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, there's a professor who has a research project who did the exact same thing 10 years ago. So he's just repeating what some other guy did 10 years ago, which doesn't advance anything. It's most of the reasonably safe methods implant sensories at nerve edges of limbs and such. The brain is really a very difficult thing to get a direct connection on. It has a blood-brain barrier. It's sealed with multiple membranes and then fluid and then a skull. And in order to go right into the gray matter and put a bunch of arrays of pins into the gray matter, you have to kind of violate all those highly secure aspects of the brain. And it's very difficult not to have secondary infections once you do that. So although maybe someday someone will figure some way of getting implanted electrodes into brains without ready open access to the outside world, where brains really don't want to be exposed, it's not being done yet. All of his experimental animals, as you mentioned, died. They lied and they said that they were terminal animals to begin with. They weren't, except that they knew that they were going to die from the experiments. So it was being chosen for the experiments that labeled them terminal. You know, he'll do what he wants to do. He tried to promote robots and ended up getting a dancer to dress up in a Lycra a robot android suit and dance for a while. Last year, they brought out some latest, greatest robots who had to be held on either side because they'd fall down. And they do about 1% of what state-of-the-art robotics is capable of. So he's a bit of a grifter. He was promoting solar cells. He said he had solar cells that looked like shingles and presented a house with shingles and said it was solar cells when it wasn't. It was shingles. So he lies a lot. A lot. He also has mentioned his truck, which apparently is going to lose them a lot of money. Every time he promotes something, it's almost always wrong. He's lucky that he has some very nice rocket scientists that he hired and pays, because otherwise everything would turn to dross. Even his vehicles are kind of folding in on themselves these days. And the autopilot programming is probably known to be the worst technology in the world, talking to other researchers in the field. So he's a carnival act, unfortunately. Successful as hell, you know, somehow. You got a bunch of people to give you $220 billion. That's a heck of a carnival act.
And it's a hell of a way to advance the state of the art. The fact that the Barnum and Baileys of the world are advancing society's capabilities in these areas is just phenomenal. And you know, the whole Starship project and the fact that they just build this stuff hand over fist, you know, and the fact, I don't know, these cars, he supposedly has a backlog of hundreds and hundreds of these cars that he's got to produce. And that he's going to be banging these things out coming at the end of the year. So we'll have to see all these new, cool-looking Tesla sharp trucks driving around, you know. It's phenomenal that it's happening at all.
Well, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people who try a lot of things, and sometimes it advances the technology, and sometimes not. Toyota has a bee in its backside as far as hydrogen fuel, which is very difficult to do, and there's no actual hydrogen infrastructure anyplace. So you have to build out a new hydrogen fuel infrastructure in the same way that you have to build out the electric vehicle, electrical charging infrastructure. So, and I don't know how many infrastructures you can build simultaneously and not go bankrupt. You know, the problem is with his satellites. He's pushing a whole bunch of satellites into a low orbit. Then I think Bezos has decided he wants to do the same thing. And there's some European setup wanting to put up satellites. And before you know it, we'll have so many satellites circling us that we won't be able to see the stars anymore. So I don't know. It's a little chaotic out there. Are you out there, William?
Everybody doubled. All right, who's on?
It's just us chickens here.
But apparently it's still doubled.
Hello, Maxim?
Can you two be, are you guys getting me?
Yes, I hear you now. I heard you once before. I didn't hear the doubling, which maybe because I was asking William if he was there, so we were tripling or something. I don't know.
Just let me know when you guys have a minute to want to talk about the repeater.
Sure, please, feel free.
I just wanted to ask you if you could explain a little bit more about what you were telling me about the tail and the wire and Echolink and the changing and all that. Just, I think I got it, but would you mind explaining a little more what that tail thing is about?
Okay. When the repeater starts to transmit, it breaks the squelch. At the very end of its transmission, it has what's called a squelch tail, which is when it stops transmitting, it doesn't stop. The squelch doesn't trigger immediately. It triggers some seconds afterwards. And if it triggers too late, you get what's called a crash. And that generates some additional noise on the repeater's input, and that can screw up Echolink a lot. There's a lot of documentation of squelch tail and how to adjust timing. And I think it was Monday night, I spent the better part of a couple hours tweaking the timing coefficients to get rid of it, because what would happen is the crash would trigger my Vox, which would then key the repeater, which would then squelch tail that triggered the Vox, and it would loop around and around and around endlessly.
What I'm getting is basically becomes kind of the end of the transmission. It gets confused for a beginning of a new transmission, and then it gets into a loop of opening and closing, but with, like, basically just noise, opening and closing communications.
The way that people perceive it is the repeater seems to be kerchunking once every 2-3 seconds for hours and hours and hours, unless I'm there to readjust the timing.
Got it. I don't think I've seen it do that for hours and hours and hours, but I've definitely had kind of a thought where a couple of times somebody was trying to join, and you hear it kerchunk, 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 and nothing happens. I always thought it was just maybe another station trying to get on and being unsuccessful. Maybe that still is, but interesting problem. But it sounds like you've adjusted it and it's working a little bit better now.
Well, I adjusted it on my end. It's problematic that it needed to be adjusted. So the idea in the back of my head is if it needed to be adjusted for no apparent reason, it's highly likely there'll come a time when the length of the tail will get longer and it'll go outside the range of the corrections I made, and it'll do it all over again. But only time will tell.
Question. So what could generate this? What would make the repeater start doing that? Unless it's getting really faulty. Like what else? It's like, you need a restart or clean out, or like what's going on there?
I never really looked into what controls the timing of the cutout, if it's a setting of the repeater or the controller. But something is keeping the repeater live after it stops hearing a PL tone that it's repeating from another source. In other words, you know, there's someone transmitting to the repeater. He's sending a RF signal. The RF signal is including a PL tone. It's the PL tone that triggers the transmit function of either the repeater or the controller to the repeater, and the timing constants of how long after you stop transmitting to the repeater that it stops transmitting back is a function of the circuits that are there and the adjustments that have been made.
I guess my curiosity is, why would this be changing? If it's in the circuitry, I guess the circuitry is going bad, or let's say a capacitor is going out, maybe that's why, but beyond that, it shouldn't change. So another kind of follow-up question is, do we ever restart the repeater? Do we do that?
Well, I mean, you can certainly try that. I don't think that that's what's going on, as you mentioned earlier. Components age. The value of components slowly change, and especially when there are relatively abrupt temperature changes. Monday was particularly chilly. I think it was in the 50s, so it might be a combination of the circuits are getting a little older, but before this past week, they were warm enough so that the timing was enough that the EchoLink didn't bark up. And when the temperature dipped on Monday, maybe it was just the last straw, and the timing kind of shifted a little bit. I haven't kind of tested it back at the original settings because it's just easier to leave them this way. I so far don't know if it does anything detrimental to just lengthen the timing for these things. And, you know, it's helpful in that the funny thing is the repeater makes some kind of a noise every 10 minutes. So what I was doing was adjusting the timing, and then it would sit there quietly, and then the repeater would break its squelch every 10 minutes and set up the echo. So the fact that I don't have to run to the computer and reset everything anymore, I might as well leave it at this setting. But, you know, it's something to think about. Certainly when you get there, probably going to turn it off and turn it on again just for the heck of it. I wouldn't bet anything that's going to solve it. I think it's probably more of an age and temperature type of situation. So far, we can correct for it. I don't know what will happen in the future.
Comment.
Certainly. Comment away.
In my humble opinion, if it works, don't fix it. And if you decide to reboot it, be prepared to replace it.
Well, I understand your sentiments, but you know, if a repeater can't take a turning it off and turning it on, it's not a good sign. So, you know, I mean, if it's a real esoteric piece of components, you know, or very old, and you got to treat it with tender loving care, I would agree with you. But, you know, it's kind of like saying, well, you know, my radio is working fine. I should never turn it off and turn it on again.
Agree. There is this inevitable Con Ed disaster, but the problem is, as an operating engineer, do you want to cause a disaster on Friday night, or do you want to try it on Monday morning?
Well, I'm suggesting that someone do it as part of a kind of a tune-up assessment visit to the repeater. The repeater has really, really needed someone to change the damn audio files. You know, for the last 3-4 years, the repeater mumbles out an announcement, and, you know, it would be nice if it spoke a little bit more accurately. So, you know, there are things that kind of do need to be tweaked. We've been very, very fortunate. We had to have people go up there once about a year ago when it got stuck in a loop and it wouldn't disengage the transmitter. But otherwise, you know, I talked to these people who manage Limark's repeaters, and, you know, they're almost at the repeater site every week or two. You know, I mean, one time in 4 years is an amazing accomplishment that we were able to get away with that.
So the pictures on the website. Anyway, that was a good day. So yeah, I totally agree. We need to do this, but it's certainly a serious proposition to be able to do it. And one of my suggestions is to try to use remote hands, because now we have the Zoom technology. And this is so much better than we ever had before. But we could set up a Zoom thing within the committee so that people that actually know what's going on with the equipment who can't attend, we can all be online together during the event, like we have like a meeting or something like that. And so if somebody would like do the bulkhead, and then I'm sure we're going to get a good signal up on the roof. And so like you could open the meeting or, you know, Berlot, and then, you know, the committee... You know, we could have, like, people tune in that know how to do it, and then we could type the code back and forth in the messages, and if we needed to move files that didn't work, and we'd have testers available, you know, from their location. So I think that, you know, with a group effort, we could probably do something.
Well, I tend to believe in the old line, keep it simple. Get a couple of guys who have some idea of how things go, who've read the manuals, who know the instructions, who have the laptop and the program and the audio files and the means to connect it to the controller and download it, and have those guys do it. To, you know, set up a committee, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of jokes about the efficiency of committees. I don't think we need a committee. We need a couple of guys who, if they don't have a lot of experience, at least are kind of enthusiastic and can read. And, you know, I mean, we all started at the very beginning. You know, I mean, Mitch didn't kind of come out of his mother's womb with an understanding of how the DR2X operates. We bought the DR1X, and it came with instructions, and he read them. And then we bought the 2X, and he read those. And we bought the controller, and he read those, and it went from there. So I don't think we need a, you know, I mean, there was a time that someone wanted to set up a committee about something where it was probably best for one guy to make sure it got done. I think it was that VE exam that you hosted. Thank you for that. I think Berlot mentioned that we should get together and have a committee and have meetings in Zoom. And I replied that, you know, after the avalanche, the pebbles no longer have a vote. So, yeah, I think keeping it simple is the best approach. You know, you introduce more variables and it gets even more complicated.
First of all, we already have a committee. I'm on it. We don't seem to be able to get anything done. And as far as I'm concerned, what we need is the ability of people who can't get there to help the people who can get there. And the people who can't get there can be remote hands, and we can work together like a Zoom meeting. So I think it would be cool to set that up, and I hope Max is listening. Because I think if we got a Zoom meeting so that at least if we had backup support, we knew if something fucks up or something like that, you know, we have people there we can dial into, and you guys are knowing that we're doing it, so you're going to be available and at least answer the phone if the problems arise or come up on a Zoom meeting. So I just think it would be a good event that we could maybe schedule within the committee that we already have and to try to work something out like that.
Well, William, I leave it to the committee to decide what they want to do and do what they want to do. You are free to bring it up to Max. He's part of the committee. I'm not part of the committee. And Mitch, You know, I understand Mitch has a lot of issues and time limitations and such. So that's not making life easy. I understand and appreciate it. And, you know, if you all of you have some kind of idea that this is going to be more effective, then so be it. It's up to you guys.
That's what I'm asking for. Is I said, do you think it'd be possible, if we ever get this together, for us to, like, schedule a Zoom meeting so that somebody off-site would be able to set that meeting up, and then we could, like, tune in and out of it, you know, with a stable, you know, person at you know, like you or something, or Berlot, you know, as the operator of the net, you know, Zoom net control. And, you know, if we go in and we, like, do whatever, we can, like, show what the stuff looks like. We can share our camera view and, you know, show what's going on and, you know, be able to communicate if there are questions. So, and then it might be interesting for other people that would be invited to be able to watch on a special link. I don't know. But, you know, is it possible to us to use the web, the like, our club Zoom for an activity like that? And do we schedule it with you?
Well, number one, we really don't have a club Zoom. We have is Berlot has her own account, and she is kind enough and generous enough to offer it to us once a month for the meetings. So if you are interested, I would suggest that you check that to Max about it as well, and see if you come to a conclusion that that would be a good idea. Then you contact Berlot and tell her when you would like to have the Zoom meeting so that she can schedule it on her account, and then you can publicize it for the rest of the club people and see what you got, what goes on.
That sounds cool. I don't know if Max is listening or not, but, you know, I thought of this as maybe a good idea, how we could, you know, be more effective if problems came, because I've run a lot of remote teams and they need support. So, anyway, that's great. Thanks for that information. And I think I've got to move on for the evening. So, it was a great puzzle. And maybe somebody's got a tech question for you.
Okay, William. Well, thank you for coming and participating. I always appreciate it. Once again, I am AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Tuesday, Wednesday of every month at 9 p.m. Answering technical questions, topics, and what have you. If anyone out there has any technical questions that they would like to ask before we shut it down for tonight, please hit that push to talk, give us your first name and your call sign.
KG2VA with a comment, unless somebody else has a question.
Sure, Max, comment away.
So, for William's conversation, I actually scheduled some time with Mitch for Monday morning, early morning, to go up to the repeater and see if we can get in, if we can find keys, and yada, yada, yada. So if that works out well, once I figure out how to get there, how to navigate, like, talk to, then we can probably start scheduling what William was talking about. Right now, honestly, I just want to see where the building is, how to get in, like, what's the right-of-way, how to get to this repeater. And then if we are lucky, we'll even upload the WAV file. We'll see. If we get in there, see it, dust it off, reboot it, and leave without any comments or issues, I'd say that would be a success. And then after that, we can talk about doing this a little bit more often. I just want to even get there once.
Very good, Max. I agree with you. Like I said, keep it simple.
And then if it does work out, I'll report back on it in our meeting on Wednesday. So hopefully that works out. But, you know, weather-dependent, Mitch and his ability-dependent. So, yeah, stay tuned. Nonetheless, it's late. I am going to head out. So, Roy, thank you for hosting. And I'll let you know how make a fair went and some of the follow-ups in that interesting things. Nonetheless, have a good night. And, thank you for hosting us.
Thank you, Max, and I appreciate all that you did at the Makers Fair, and I look forward to next Wednesday to hear all the details. People mentioned little bits and pieces, how EKD2MSU was on the 10-meter net this Sunday, and we talked a little bit about it, so I look forward to that conversation next Wednesday. Okay, this is AC2GS. If anyone has anything further to say before we close it down for tonight, now is as good a time as ever to say it. Okay, this net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be November 1st, which will be held by teleconference. Club members will be emailed with details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general meeting can email me, ACGS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., normal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. The technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the Internet as well as our 10-meter net. Just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. Well, we're going to roll this all up and shut it down, but we'll be back November 8th for our next installment, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, Bob KD2NVB. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Everyone, have a safe and easy week, and we'll talk to you down the line. This is AC2GS clear.